Radiolab is supported by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
WNYC Studios is supported by Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, where hundreds of researchers make new discoveries inspired by the work of previous Dana-Farber scientists. Learn more about their momentum at DanaFarber.org/everywhere.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Ready?
Mm-hmm.
This is Radiolab. I'm Jad Abumrad.
And I'm Robert Krulwich. And on this show, we've been talking about...
Memory.
Remembering and forgetting.
Yeah. Yes.
And this next story is about the most drastic version of this particular back and forth that I can think of. It just can't get any worse than this. This is a story of a man named Clive Waring. It was told to me by the famous neurologist and writer Oliver Sacks.
Okay.
Hey, first of all, who was Clive Waring when he was well?
He was a gifted musician and musicologist who was really a pioneer in Renaissance music, especially the music of Orlandus Lassus.
And he had a group called the London Lassus Ensemble.
This is Deborah, Clive's wife.
And in every concert, his signature tune was Musica Dei Donum, Music the Gift of God.
Boy, Music the Gift of God, that's sort of interesting.
Exactly.
And then what happened?
Then, rather suddenly, in March of 85, he became ill.
It began, she says, with just a headache.
And he often had headaches because he often overworked, so it was nothing out of the ordinary.
But it didn't go away.
We called the doctor, and the local doctors pronounced that it was a very bad flu bug.
The nature of the illness was not clear, nor its gravity.
Yes. On the fifth day of the headache, he was suddenly out of it.
Suddenly he couldn't remember things.
He didn't know my name, didn't know his home address.
When the diagnosis was made of a herpes encephalitis, the damage had been done.
He was left, says Oliver, with the most severe amnesia ever documented.
This is a man who, at least when things were very severe, would forget something in the blink of an eyelid.
It's very hard to imagine what this must have been like. His wife, Deborah, wrote about it, though, in a book of her own. And she says, his ability to perceive what he saw and heard was unimpaired. But he didn't seem to be able to retain any impression of anything for more than a blink. The view before the blink, utterly forgotten. Each blink, each glance away and back brought him an entirely new view.
Well, every moment is his first waking moment.
It's a long time since I've seen anything. My eyes opened today for the first time.
There is no other moment for Clive except this one.
In fact, I can't remember now what was going on this morning or why I was here. I've never seen a thing.
This is Clive from a documentary filmed a year after he got sick.
That has no memory for me at all. Anything at all. I don't know what the hell's going on.
What's wrong with you?
You can hear his wife, Deborah, trying for the umpteenth time to explain to him what happened.
I've never seen anyone at all.
This is one of the things that's wrong with you.
All he can feel is that he's not there.
I've never seen a thing.
That he's been nowhere.
I've been blind the whole time. I've been deaf the whole time. No sense of touch.
You've been conscious, but the brain hasn't been able to store.
Not as far as I'm concerned. I mean, conscious actually means the person involved is actually connected with it.
Yes.
Doesn't it? That hasn't happened.
You've not been able to store. Or everything that you experience is being lost. It's fading away.
It's not registering.
It's not registering, that's right. It's not making any impact. It's not leaving a trace or an imprint on the brain. So it happens and then it fades.
Proust has a wonderful description of waking up from deep sleep in a hotel room, a strange room, and perhaps feeling confused and not knowing where you are, what's around you, or not even knowing who you are. He says that memory comes like a rope let down from heaven to draw one out of the abyss of unbeing. no such rope is available for Clive.
But the staff at the hospital try to help.
We put a diary by his bed, and we initially wrote in it, "You are in St. Mary's Hospital, Paddington. It is, etc., etc." And then we encourage Clive to write things down.
So he starts to keep a journal. He is extremely intent on trying to document his state. He is very, very precise.
He would look at his watch to see what time was this momentous event occurring of first consciousness. And so he would write down 10:06, awake first time. And then have the same sensation and put 10:07, awake first time, truly awake first time. Ignore the last entry. Now I'm awake. This is the first real awakeness. And so the diaries are line by line a succession of astonished awakenings.
People's entries in the diary are rubbish. What does that mean?
I have no idea.
Did you write that?
I've never consciousness knowledge at all, no. They're showing me now for the first time.
But is it your handwriting?
Yes, it is. But I know nothing about it at all.
So how do you think it got there?
I don't. I presume the doctors don't know.
But you must
have... No, I haven't. I haven't seen the book at all till now.
No, all I've said...
No, that means I haven't seen it. I have no knowledge of it at all. That's all. There's no knowledge of that book at all. It's entirely new to me.
But you've put... Who would put that apart?
I don't know, but no. Oh, for heaven's sake, use intelligence, for heaven's sake. I haven't read the bloody thing.
It seems as about as horrible as anything I could imagine.
Yes, Clive gets a sense of deep horror many, many times a day.
Same as death. No difference in day and night, no thoughts at all.
No one quite knows what to do with someone with amnesia.
I've never seen any human being since I've been ill. I don't remember sitting down on this chair, for example.
They're not mad, they're not retarded.
It's precisely like death.
Clive has now suffered with this total amnesia for more than 20 years.
Can you imagine right to have one night 20 years long with no dream? That's what it's been like. Just like death. And in that sense, it's been totally painless.
And yet somehow, some things have sustained. The love he has for his wife, Deborah, remained part of him. But even though he doesn't remember, for example, his children's names, he doesn't remember anything about his immediate past or even his relatively distant past. When Deborah walks into the hospital room and he sees her, what happens?
He gasps,
darling,
with relief and excitement. And they hug and he kisses her with enormous passion. He has suddenly been rescued from the abyss. There's suddenly something and someone familiar.
And I've not seen you at all till now. I've never seen anyone at all till now.
She goes home, and the phone is ringing. She's just visited him.
And she might find 20 calls on the message machine
from a man who doesn't know she's been there. Minutes later.
This is Clive here. I don't want to speak to anyone else. Anyone see to you, darling? Can you come and see me, please? I haven't seen you yet, and I want to. Please come, darling. Bye-bye.
11 minutes later.
This is Clive here. I have no idea what's been going on. If any way you can get to me tonight, please do come. I want to see you, please. Please come, darling. It's Clive here. I don't care about anyone else. This is Clive here.
No.
In case you don't recognize my voice.
He does not remember her in every way. He may fail to recognize her if she just passes. He cannot describe her. He may forget her name, but he does not forget her embrace, her warmth, her love, her kisses, her caring for him.
So the question is, what happened here that he could forget everything, it seems, but not her?
When I asked Oliver, he referred to an experiment, a particular experiment.
Well, this was a famous or infamous experiment done by Claparède, who was a French neurologist in the beginning, and this was done at the beginning of the 20th century.
And there was this famous patient who basically had a version of the memory problem that was in the film Memento.
That's science writer Stephen Johnson.
Basically, she couldn't remember anything longer than kind of 5 or 10 minutes. It would just disappear. And every day she would go see her doctor, and he would greet her, and she would say hello and introduce herself, and he would say, well, we see each other every day, but she wouldn't remember. And then one day, this is kind of a funny story because it's not exactly what you want your doctor doing. One day what he did was he concealed, as he was shaking her hand, he concealed a little thumbtack in his palm and reached and shook her hand and pricked her hand, and she, you know, recoiled and said, well, you're a terrible doctor. And then the next day,
when she came back again and didn't know who he was,
didn't recognize him at all as usual, and said hello and introduced herself, and then he reached out to shake her hand and she paused, and she had this instinctive kind of feeling like there's some kind of threat here. If she had no memory, if she could remember who this guy was, how could she somehow remember this threat, the threat posed by the pinprick in the palm?
Well, this is Oliver's notion.
I think memories of pain and joy, I think, are sort of primordial.
Deep down in the oldest parts of our brains, Oliver thinks, there may be a place for the memories that matter the most.
And I like the idea of a sort of subcortical safe vault.
For Clive, protected in the vault out of reach from his amnesia was love for his wife, and one thing more.
Yeah, I'd taken him off the ward to get some peace because he was hypersensitive to noise. And the most peaceful place happened to be the chapel. And we picked up an old hymn book. And for want of anything better to do, and because Clive talked jumble most of the time at that stage, I began to sing.
And all of a sudden, like it was the most natural thing in the world,
he joined in. He could sing. I was amazed that he could still read music and sing.
Was it a tentative sort of stumbling thing?
No, just like falling off a log.
Full voice, strong, everything.
Yep. So thrilled.
Did you want to sing another?
Oh, you bet.
And another?
Yeah, absolutely.
And if he could do that, she wondered, well, what else could he do?
We even brought his choir in.
The one he used to conduct in London.
To the hospital chapel. I had a hunch that if we stood Clive in front of them with a piece of music, he would be able to conduct. And it happened just as I'd hoped. His singers were flabbergasted. There was their old conductor bringing them in completely and utterly himself.
And almost the instant it was over, it was over. He had no memory of what he'd just done. In fact, later on she showed him a tape of that very performance.
What would you say if I told you you conducted the Lattice Ensemble last week?
That's hilarious.
I thought you'd say that.
That sounds hysterical. I know not at all.
Do you want me to prove it to you?
This is the strangest thing I've ever seen.
On the screen, right in front of him, there he is, on the pedestal, baton in hand, and he's conducting.
He is fully in the music, fully himself. So music, in a way, becomes this Proustian rope from heaven, which will recall him to himself.
And no one really knows why.
I remember that now.
What music does that makes this possible, not just in Clive, but in many others. Maybe it's something about music itself, that it's so richly organized, that every time you're in a song, you can feel what has been and what's about to be. Maybe Clive was just carried along in the architecture of music.
But when the music stops, he falls out of time. Music gives him a piece of time in which to exist.
Out of time, out of memory, out of himself, there's two things left. There's love, and there's the joy of music. Everything else is gone. But for some reason, those stay. Thanks to Deborah Waring, she's written a book about Clive called Forever Today, A Memoir of Love and Amnesia. Thanks also, once again, to Oliver Sacks, who's included a piece about Clive in his new book on music and memory called Musicophilia. And thanks to Uden Associates, producers of the 1986 Jonathan Miller documentary, Equinox, Prisoner of Consciousness.
That's our show for today.
Yep.
And never fear if you didn't absorb everything you just said, because you can always go to our website, radiolab.org. We will give you links there to any of the books you just mentioned.
You got to subscribe to the podcast, right?
Yes, radiolab.org.
Or go to iTunes.
Oh, one more thing. You can send us an email, too.
Please.
radiolab@wnyc.org. That's the email address.
Uh-huh.
I'm Chad Abumrad.
And I'm Robert Wilwich.
And this was Radiolab.
Three new messages. Message one.
Radio Lab is produced by Jed Abumrad, senior producer Ellen Horn, assistant producer Lula Miller, production executive Dan Capella, contribution editor Janach Lehrer, production support by Sarah Pellegrini, Ryan Scammell, Kat Goldberg, Evir Mitra, Mark Phillips.
Message 2.
Hello, this is your computer hard drive. Thanks also to Trent Walby, Miyuki Jacaranta, Carla Setaho Murphy. Special thanks to Greg Gasparino, Andy Lancet, Eric John, Vince Gardino, Roderick Bowe, Alan Smith, Sam Bingman, Lorraine Maddox.
Thank you also for Justine Paul, Caroline Moses, Indira Etvaro, Luis Kaftal, Tim Cole, and Crystal Duhem. Special thanks to Mandy Shapira at BNB Photo Video Superstore. And special thanks to me, Raisa, at Office Furniture Plates, good quality and the best prices in New York City.
And thanks to me, the computer. I am the future.
Message 3.
Hello, this is Deborah Waring to read your credits. Radio Lab is produced by WNYC New York Public Radio and distributed by NPR National Public Radio. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the Annie E. Casey Foundation, helping disadvantaged children and their families connect to strong and supportive neighborhoods. Find them on the web at aecf.org. Also, Anne and John Herman celebrating the Breakthrough Collaborative involving middle school students in learning and older students in teaching at breakthroughcollaborative.org, and the Ford Foundation, a resource for innovative people and institutions worldwide, on the web at fordfound.org. This is NPR National Public Radio.
End of message.
Radiolab is supported by the John Templeton Foundation, funding research and catalyzing conversations that inspire people with awe and wonder. Learn about the researchers making the latest discoveries in the science of well-being, complexity, forgiveness, and free will at templeton.org/podcast.